Up next, it's Words and Pictures with guest Dan Peraro, best known for his cartoon Bizarro.
Yes, good morning. And just in case you're wondering, you are listening to Words and Pictures with SW Conser and my co-host Bill Dodge. And we are live in the studio today talking to the creator of the comic strip Bizarro.
Yep, Dan Peraro is on the line, and you can join in the conversation by calling 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. That intro you guys played was creepy cool.
Thanks.
We kind of that Bizarro thing. What did you guys make that?
That's us talking backwards, and we threw a little Frank Zappa in the blender with it.
Man, that was cool. I love it. I'm going to use that in my show.
Oh, yes. By all means. Cable listeners are most likely to have seen your work in the Oregonian's comics page. So what exactly are you doing in Eugene right now?
Oh, man, at the moment
sitting
I'm
here.
Yeah, I'm sitting here talking on the phone to a couple of guys in Portland.
hope you got your coffee.
I just had a show here last night at the University of Oregon, and it was actually a really crazy show. Every show of mine is a little bit different, but this one was the weirdest show ever. I was supposed to... Typically, I do these things in comedy clubs or small theaters, and in this case, they had me booked in a some kind of a performance venue at the university. But then, at the last minute, literally like 3 days ago, they realized they had double booked the room with a Holocaust event.
Oh, charming!
Yeah, and so I offered to share the room. I would do a line, then they could just say something, then I would do a line. But they didn't want to do that, so they kicked me out and put me in another room. And this room was a lecture hall, which had a giant immovable countertop in the middle of the room, like 12 feet long and 3 feet deep, like this gigantic island of knowledge or something. I guess I don't know what they do with it, but...
Now,
so anyway,
a performer can work around these things.
Yeah, so it's like I've got, and I've got all these sets and everything that I put up. It's kind of it's a stupidly elaborate set that I put together for my shows and schlep around the country with me. So I had to figure out how to build around that thing. And then there was this mess where the newspaper said it started at 7. My website said it started at 8, but then the tickets they printed up said it started at 8:30.
So we should make sure.
Yeah, so I had people just arriving all night long like an open house, and I couldn't really start the show until 8:30, so I had to stand up and just do, improv and answering questions and a little bit of shtick for an hour just to keep people from getting mad and burning the place down like the Muslims over the Danish cartoon, So, yeah, it was a kooky show and a long evening. But it ended up being really great. At the end, I got a standing ovation, which, you can't beat that.
No. Not too many cartoonists get those. So,
yeah, that's the thing. We really don't. We don't get standing ovations. So that's the nice thing about doing these comedy shows.
So given what happened in Eugene, let's make absolutely sure we've got the right time for Portland, the Wonder Ballroom, this evening.
Yeah, we've got the Bizarro Baloney Show going on at the Wonder Ballroom. And give us all the details so that listeners can check that out.
Well, I don't actually know any details other than what you just said. I know I'm at the Wonder Ballroom tonight. I'm guessing it's 8 o'clock, but I can't be sure. I really, to be honest, I just, when I'm headed to a place, I Google it, and I find the directions, and I go there, and I set up, and I play. I do my show, and I sort of leave all the details up to other people. My publicist knows how difficult it is to manage me.
Well, there is a website. You can go to www.bizarro.com and look for Bizarro Comedy Tour. And how do you spell that?
Which one, Bizarro?
Yeah, bizarro.com, sure.
Yeah, it's one Z, two R's.
All right.
And go ahead and just play with the spelling and see what you get.
That's right.
Every other spelling of Bizarro, you'll go to a porn site of some sort or another. But just keep playing with the spelling until you come to a site that does not have obscenities on the opening page, and that one's mine.
But just lots of little floating icons.
Yeah.
And we do have, okay, we have a pair of tickets to give away to the Bizarro Bologna Show tonight to the first caller to correctly identify any one of the odd little icons that regularly show up in the corners of a Bizarro comic panel. And a few of them are also floating around on the Bizarro.com website. Now, if listeners out there think they know, call the KBOO front desk at 503-231-8032, and you can win a pair of tickets to the Bizarro Bologna Show tonight. That's 503-231-8032.
Finally, a question on the radio that I know the answer to, and I can't call and get the and win the ticket.
Well, let's talk about your comic for a minute. Your Bizarro has been syndicated for, what, over 20 years now?
Yeah, it's been 21 years. I cannot believe it myself, but it has. I started in 1985 when I was four.
Do you think it would be have an easy time getting syndicated in family newspapers in this day and age?
It certainly would be a lot more difficult. The newspaper industry has changed a lot, and newspapers are having financial difficulties. They buy fewer cartoons, so the syndicates have to try to curtail the comics to be sort of more commercial and licensable. That's a hard word to say first thing in the morning. Licensable. And the comics that are coming out today tend to have some kind of a very strong commercial and demographic point to them, whereas my cartoon is my cartoon is like an art school project. You know, I think it's just a reflection of the strange things that, you know, just the way in which my mind works, the way I see things, and my opinion. And so it is much more of just an artistic expression than it is a commercial product. People have never been able to successfully market very much stuff from my cartoons, other than, you know, a handful of cards here and there and books.
Yeah, what are you going to have, plush dolls of a pirate with, missing head with a, you know...
I would love that.
With a peg leg in his neck or whatever, you know.
Totally. I mean, who wouldn't love that? Who would not want to see that?
I would.
Exactly, me too, but, there's not enough of us out there to make it. The types that run these corporations that make plush dolls and stuff, they kind of don't get it. You know, they don't understand how interesting it would be to have that sort of a product out there. So that kind of stuff never happens to me.
Well, Dan, speaking of surrealism, in the early years of comic strips, surrealism was the order of the day. Newspaper readers would fall into dreamscapes all the time with the likes of Crazy Cat, Little Nemo, Polly and her pals, and we were wondering about influences in the past when you were a youngster and current ones too.
Yeah, you probably liked the early 20th century surrealists and the underground cartoonists way back when, and there's people nowadays on the internet maybe.
But that's just a guess.
it's totally true. I was hooked on surrealism as a kid. I loved Crazy Cat, loved Little Nemo. I loved Salvador Dali was a real favorite of mine. Anything that altered reality made things, melt from one thing to another. Yeah, the Nemo dreamscapes were just amazing. You know what really surprised me? I don't know if anybody even knows this cartoon strip anymore, but when I grew up in the newspaper constantly was this cartoon called Gasoline Alley.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was like completely normal. It was just, it could not have been more average day-to-day soap opera style cartoon of life. Just
set in the back alleys of a rundown neighborhood.
Originally drawn by Frank King, just to set the record straight.
But there are some really early Gasoline Alleys that look like he was on a mushroom trip. This like all kinds of this really crazy surreal art that melts away and turns into colors. And a lot of the early 20th century guys did that. They really made use of the art. And that's something that not very many, I'm not going to say nobody, because there are some who do, but there's just not very many cartoonists working today.
It helped go ahead.
Really make use of the art. Part of it is that newspapers continue to shrink cartoons down smaller and smaller because they want to use up less space for things that they're paying for and use more space for things they're getting paid for, like the advertising. So the advertising is squeezing the art out of the comics, really. You have people like Patrick McDonald with Mutz, who does a really interesting job with the art. He has a very, very, he's very much a cartoon historian, has an early 20th century mentality toward his art.
Yeah.
But there's only a few of us really that bother to or care to, I think, still try to pack the frame full of interesting things to look at. And that's just always been my favorite aspect of it. I really love the art.
And Mutz also references fine art. You see all kinds of references to like Mondrian or Miro or whatever in his Sunday splash panels.
And even artists whose names don't start with M.
Yes, yes. you started painting, fine art painting, and how's that going?
Yeah, I've always painted. In fact, since I was a really small child, I was just genetically programmed to be an artist. As soon as I was old enough to hold a pencil or a crayon or whatever, all I ever wanted to do was draw, and I've done that since I was a toddler. And I thought as a kid growing up that I always thought I would be a fine artist. And as an adult, I tried to make a living at fine art, but you know, I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was raised up. There you go.
Yep.
That's what happens when you're raised up in Tulsa. You say it that way. I was raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I didn't know. I mean, my dad was a petroleum engineer. My mother was a 50s housewife. You know, that I didn't know anything about the art world other than what I'd seen in books. So I had no place to jump off and really say, you know, this is what you do when you want to become an artist.
Frederick Remington, maybe?
yeah. And so I just kind of floundered around. I couldn't really make a living, and I very quickly fell into commercial art. And because there was money in it, but that's not art, you know. That's horrible stuff. I got into advertising, really low end advertising art, and I ended up gravitating toward cartoons because I needed to make a living. I wanted something that was a cross between, you know, the commercial world and the creative world, something that where I could be creative and artistic, but create a commercial product where I could make some money. And that was how I got into cartooning. It was not something I set out to do, but I've been painting all my life, off and on, and I really love doing it. And in my new book, this book, Bizarro and Other Strange Manifestations of the Art of Dan Ferraro, a typically short, succinct title.
It's a beautiful book. We have a copy of it in front of us.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a retrospective of my whole career, and it's got a lot of my fine art in there. And it's the only time that most people are ever going to see this stuff, because I don't do enough of it to, you know, mount these massive shows or have a fine art career, although I'll probably do that in the second half of my life. Once I get tired of Bizarro and retire from that, you know, then I'll become a fine artist. And
we were enjoying the self-portraits as Salvador Dali, as Frida Kahlo, and as Barbie.
Yeah, those are my those are some publicity shots from my career. That Salvador Dali mustache in that photo, that was real. I had for several years, I had this Salvador Dali mustache that I would wax to where it was stiff, and it would point up. And by the time I finally cut it off, it was long enough that I could actually, it was pretty much right in front of my eyes.
Poked somebody's eye out, geez.
Yeah, the tips of it were in front of my eyes. That's how high the thing went.
He used pomegranate juice to, apparently, and he attracted bees with his mustache. Because
really?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Wow, I didn't know that. I used like a commercial mustache wax. Which I think is bee-proof. I think they put a bee retardant on it so that that doesn't happen.
We should take a moment to clarify where we can go run down and see Dan Ferraro this evening. It's actually at 8 p.m. That's 8 p.m. at the Wonder Ballroom, and that's 128 Northeast Russell here in Portland. And their number is 503-284-8656. That's 284-8656.
And I don't know if those tickets are gone yet. But
they are, actually.
Okay, they are gone. Okay,
yeah,
well,
that's the next thing I was supposed to say.
You can still call in and join the conversation with your questions for Dan Ferraro at 503-231-8187 if you like to.
Yeah, I'll tell you that show tonight. Whether you're a fan of my cartoon or not, you should definitely it's just a fun show. People really love it. I got a standing ovation last night from I think 150 people at this university here, and
that's great.
Reasonably rare thing for. And I've been selling out shows since last week in L.A. The room in Portland is big, so I don't expect it to sell out like within the next hour or anything. But the smaller clubs that I typically play sell out really quickly, and it's becoming a more popular thing. It's just a fun show. If you don't like it, then you're just not a person who enjoys things.
Well, you've referred to it as 21st century vaudeville. So,
yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Oh man, it's when I first decided to put this thing together 5 years ago. I just thought, you know, what's like an hour and a half worth of stuff that I think would be fun to do in front of strangers, and so I had no form for it at all. So I invented. You know, I built some puppets, and I do some puppet routine. You know, I do some stand-up stuff. I do some songs, a number of comedy songs that I've written, some with costumes. I have some audience participation where I bring people up on stage. I draw on stage. I I also show, it's also a multimedia. I show slides and videos and animations. And the whole thing from start to finish, bottom to top, is stuff that I created. I did every single element of the show, the, you know, right down to the editing of the animations and the videos and stuff. It just, and you know, I even created some of the sound. I don't play anything. I don't play any instruments. But when I want to create a song, I will. I learned how to use these like GarageBand, these recording programs on the computer, and I'll actually like make the noise of the drums with my mouth, and then lay over another track of making the noise of the guitar with my mouth, and
oh,
then
nice.
Make, you know, and then lay
it's
over
like
another
like the latest
one.
Bjork album.
Yeah, and like you know, make a noise of a horn or whatever, and then I lay over these tracks and create this music for it. This and it's a really weird effect that you get in the end, but it's a comedy show. I can do whatever I want.
Nice. You know, a lot of the guests that we get on our program, the cartoonists and animators, they're not used to dealing with the public, and they get a little frightened in front of the mic, but you sound like you are just at home on a stage.
I really have a ball with it. I did a little bit of theater in high school and loved it. And then I was the singer for a punk band for a few years in my around like 18 to 22, around in there. And it was just a lot of fun. I always really missed the performance aspect, and I quit doing that stuff when I was younger, and you know, kind of buckled down and looked for ways to make a living. But it was fun to get back to. I've been doing speaking engagements for years, and that was what led into the shows. The more times I spoke, people would ask me to come speak as a cartoonist. And the more multimedia I would add, and the more jokes I would add to it. And eventually, I thought, you know, I've almost got a show here. Why don't I just like add some kooky stuff and make a whole comedy show out of it, and that's what I did. And it really is a ball. I have a great time. It's very isolating being a cartoonist. You never hear anybody laugh at your work. You never see the smiles or anything, or in some case the disgust. You know, when people get mad at the things I say in my cartoons.
Oh yeah, we want to hear about some of your hate mail later, but,
You never get a piece of that. So it's fun to. It's really fun to do doing the shows is a great way to get some face time with the readers, and I really love it.
Let's do a little radio business here. You're listening to Words and Pictures this morning on KBOO with myself, Bill Dodge, and SW Conser. Our guest this morning is Dan Peraro, creator of the newspaper cartoon Bizarro, not to mention the touring stage production that we've just been talking about that'll be this evening at the Wonder Ballroom here in Portland, the Bizarro Baloney Show.
And we have a caller who'd like to ask a question of our guest. And caller, hello, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, you're on.
Dan. Yeah, I wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed your book about the book tour that you did. I thought that was really awesome.
You're the one who bought that.
And I want to tell you I appreciate that you put a lot of animal rights things, veganism, into your cartoons.
Hey, cool. Thanks, man. That's so you're one of my peeps.
Yeah.
Tell us about, this is interesting, you were, like you said, an Oklahoma boy, and you ended up going to live in Texas for years and years, and just recently when you moved to New York, you took the opportunity to jump feet first into veganism.
Feast first. It's really, I'll tell you, it's, is that the caller's phone? Maybe?
Whoops, I guess our caller hung up, but go ahead, talk about veganism and animal rights, because it's a big part of your show and your cartoon as well.
Yeah, it was really a strange thing. I never would have guessed that I would ever be an animal rights guy. You know, like 5 years ago, if someone had told me I would be an outspoken animal rights person, I would have just laughed in their face and then covered them with barbecue sauce and eaten them. Because I was a hardcore meat eater. Like, you know, I was just raised to be a guiltless, blissful meat eater, like everybody in this country, pretty much. And I thought, the way a lot of listeners are thinking right now, that animal rights people are just hippies with too much free time, you know. Then I began hearing this barking in my head. Did you hear that bark?
Yeah, we have a dog
that
here
was in
too.
My head.
Yeah, cool. I'm staying with some folks and the dog. Anyway, I would have thought that it was just the whole thing was crazy. But I met an animal rights activist who subsequently, you know, just for fun, brought me to a farm animal sanctuary, which is a rescue organization. You know, it's a farm out in the middle of the country that has cows, chickens, pigs, and sheep and turkeys, that kind of thing. You know, so-called food animals that have been rescued from the food line. And they're, you know, they're just allowed to live in a natural environment, you know, being whatever they want to be, you know, just, I mean, within their own species, of course. They're not allowed to cross species. It's not that progressive yet. Maybe someday.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I did this, and they also educated me about, you know, they've also got all these pamphlets and stuff lying around. So I read all these pamphlets, and I found out about factory farming. Raised in Oklahoma, never heard of a factory farm, had no idea how these animals were really being treated. And when I read all this stuff and met the animals and saw that they aren't just dumb eating machines. They're just like dogs and cats. You know, they have different personalities, and they're affectionate, and they're sweet and wonderful. And I thought, man, I can't. How can I subsidize this kind of brutality and cruelty to animals with my dollars? It's just impossible. I can't do it. You know, I'm not going to, you know, and so I quit. And it scared me to death. I thought, how am I, you know, oh, my God, I'm becoming a vegan. What am I going to, you know, it's scary. Am I going to, you know, is this going to be hard? Is it going to be as hard as it was when I quit smoking?
Are you going to have a lot of gas when you go out in public, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you just never know. You never know what could happen. It's a frightening prospect. But as it turned out, it was actually much easier than I thought it would be. And much more rewarding. And the more I read about it, the more certain I became of the decision to do it. It's clearly the right thing to do, and it's like a win-win-win-win-win-win-win situation. You know, the
how many wins is that?
That's seven.
Okay.
And I'm working on the eighth, but it's good. You know, it's so much better for your health. It's better for the environment. It's better, obviously. It's, you know, you get rid of all that cruelty to animals. It's the list is unending. It really is. It's like, and it's very little that you ever have to really give up. There's these fantastic substitutions for everything that you'd ever want to eat.
And the folks who are sponsoring your tour here in Portland are Northwest Veg. And have you been in touch with them? You know about their organization?
I do. And, those are great guys. And also the Food Fight Grocery. Those guys have been selling my tickets. Those are very cool. If you guys, I'll tell you, your listeners, the interesting thing is that, like, if you're a meat eater, you're still eating vegetarian food. It's like nobody just sits around and eats slabs of meat and never touches anything else, right? So if you're eating grains or vegetables or fruits or anything, you're eating vegetarian food already.
Good point,
so
yeah.
You should go shop at Food Fight, and this is not just a commercial for them. These are really cool people. This is like it's a really cool little shop that is run by these skateboard hipster-type hip-hop groupie awesome dudes. I don't know what you want to call them. What is it the kids say today?
Dudes.
Dude. Okay, they're dudes. Dude, there are dudes running Food Fight, dude. And, these are really good guys, and they have a great store, and I don't know. I can't say enough about them, but perhaps I should.
Yes, you should.
But they'll be there tonight, and you'll be signing books afterwards, so there'll be lots of give and take.
I'll be giving out pamphlets and information. I'm always all about disseminating a lot of information. If anybody wants to know about any of this stuff, I always got it.
Should we dip into the hate mail bags?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is one of the things that is part of the show, is that you trot out some hate mail. And hate mail is always a fun thing for a cartoonist. You know, it's just like where, you know, these people, they read the cartoon, they can't stop reading the cartoon, and they don't like it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. It's one of my favorite things. One of my favorite letters, in fact, is the letter was a single sentence. The entire letter is, I read Bizarro daily, and there is absolutely never anything funny about it.
And he likes it that way.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like, you know, I rub jalapeno juice in my eye every morning, and it never fails to hurt like hell. You know, what a moron. So I felt sorry for him. I just wrote back to him and gave him permission to stop reading it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But I get some really vicious and mean ones. I mean, stuff that I can't even read on the air. I get, like, crazy stuff. Let me see if I can... I'll just flip through a few here that I read in the show and see if I can find one that would be appropriate for you guys.
Yeah, meanwhile, we've been looking at your book again, and, you know, it's very subtle, but I think your passion for animal rights has made its way into your comic strip recently in entertaining ways. You know, animals seem to be speaking up more and giving what for to humans and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoy doing that. Yeah, in my tiny way, I'm trying to get people to just sort of, I'm just trying to get people to flip things around and see it in a different way. And that's sort of what I do with all my comics anyway, is look at real life and turn it around and look at it from a different, you look at it from a different angle, and suddenly you start to see the weird things that you miss when you just routinely look at your life on a day-to-day basis. And so, yeah, I think one of my favorite ones recently, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's just a pig sitting in a diner talking to the waiter, and he says, I think I'll have the blue plate special today, but instead of the pork chop, I'd like a slab of your left buttock. And I mean, it's just a weird... I try to throw things in there that would be funny to people even if they don't get the message. But, like, there's a big message there, you know? There's a message there. Why is that pig any less important than me or you? Well, he's not.
It's interesting describing cartoons on the radio, isn't it?
Always.
You can't really see them. So we're trying to put pictures in people's heads, and we have one from the back of your book that... it's just beautiful. The colors are beautiful. It's two presumably a Navajo gentlemen with their ponies in the what looks like Monument Valley, and one has his ear to the ground, and he's saying 6 billion people running in circles.
Yeah, I like to hop those old Hollywood cliches. You know,
yeah.
I do a lot of Hollywood cliche cartoons where you look at the picture and think it's one thing, and then you read it and realize it's something else.
The pirates are always fun, too.
Yeah, we like pirates.
Fun.
Pirates and ninjas in Portland, you know, they just can't leave each other alone. There's a big pirate community.
Yeah,
lots of folks have come out as pirates lately.
Yeah, isn't it? Now, is that where this Talk Like a Pirate Day came from?
I'm not sure.
Didn't
where
it come from up in this part of the country?
I'm not sure where that came from, but the Northwest was really kind of the institutor of pirate punk and pirate core music. I know that the Seafair Pirates up in Seattle have this bizarre. If you ever go up to Seafair in Seattle, there's this pirate ship, this giant thing that rolls around on wheels with cannons going off. It's the damnedest thing you've ever seen, and I can't believe it's street legal. But yeah, there's been pirate punk music around for ages. The Dolomites and Scurvy and Mutiny and a lot of bands that sound a lot like the Pogues in their Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash days.
It's really funny too that it's interesting how something can catch on so far from its natural habitat. You know, I mean, how far you can't get any further away from the Caribbean and stay in the United States. You know, like the pirates are from the Caribbean. No real pirate ever found its way to Seattle, but there you go.
Well, you never know. I mean,
there might have been a few, matey. You never
but,
know.
You know, another thing that Portland has going for it is a pretty impressive comics community. Artists here like to hook up and share ideas, as well as the occasional microbrew. And, you know, although folks out here at this end of the corner of the country think of New York as a real dog-eat-dog sort of place, a couple of our guests, I'm thinking Aaron Rainier and Jessica Abel, have been telling us about the up-and-coming cartoonist community in New York. Apparently you've had quite a bit to do with building up the scene there in the past couple years.
Yeah, I've been trying. I was I became the president of the National Cartoonist Society's New York chapter, which basically just means that I have to organize, which basically means that I have to organize parties and happy hours. That's like what the president does. There's really nothing more. It's kind of like being in charge of a fraternity. So, me and another guy, we started putting together monthly happy hours. The last Monday of every month, we cartoonists get together at a pub in Midtown and just have sandwiches and beer and whatever. And it's been really fun. We've invited a lot of people. We try to get a lot of the underground guys and animation and just, you know, anybody that's in the cartoon industry at all is welcome to join us.
So a lot of free flow of ideas happens?
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit of networking, but, you know, mostly it's just cool to hang out with. Like, I really love meeting the young guys that are doing interesting stuff on the web and then, you know, and the younger guys. And I also enjoy meeting these ancient icons, people that I grew up reading. For instance, Al Jaffe, who does the fold-in cover on the back of Mad Magazine since 69 or whenever he started that. He comes every month.
Cool.
And he's just the coolest guy. He's 171 years old. And now he's literally...
171 years young.
He's literally... I think he's 80. He's like 79, 80, 81, something like that. But he's still just as sharp as ever. He still does those fold-out covers every week.
I imagine that he himself is foldable. You can just fold him up and...
Yeah, probably.
Put him in a valise.
You fold him in and he turns into a whole different cartoonist. Bada boom.
Rimshot.
Hey, I found a piece of hate mail here I want to read to you.
Oh, excellent.
This is funny. Occasionally I will do cartoons about gay marriage or gay rights or something. And here's one that I got from Lexington, Kentucky. I'm writing regarding the bizarro appearing today in the Lexington Herald Leader about the gay man in the hospital. My first reaction, sick. Dapper Dan obviously thinks moral beliefs are worthless. He is sadly mistaken. I truly hope he sees the truth before it's too late. Biblical standards are not fashionable in the liberal American media today, but you can bet they will be on the day of eternal judgment.
Signed, George Bush.
Yeah, so I wrote back to her. I wrote back to her, when Santa Claus returns to feed bigots to his magic reindeer, you're going to be sorry.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it gets worse, though, man. Some of these people are, like, vicious.
So you answer your hate mail. I love that. Now I want to write you some hate mail.
Please do. Please do, because if it's good, I'll use it in my show. I love it. I love hate mail. It's one of my favorite things. Well, especially idiotic hate mail. When somebody has a legitimate concern, you know, and sometimes people will write to me, they misunderstand what I've done. Like, if I do a gay rights cartoon, I will also get hate mail from gay people who think that I'm bashing them, because they're just so used to being bashed. So that's what, like, when I write back and I say, gosh, I'm really sorry that you misunderstood my intent. This was not at all what I meant. I can, and usually they kind of have a point. I can see how I didn't really express it clearly enough to where I could avoid that kind of misunderstanding.
When I was in college, we had a surrealist comic strip called Bob's Inferno, me and three other cartoonists, and we actually integrated our first piece of hate mail into the strip, and it worked really, really well. Made the guy a character.
Yeah, people love it. When I do the hate mail segment in my show, people just roll. I mean, they roll in the aisle, and I think it's because everyone has dealt with an irate moron at some point in their life, somebody who totally misunderstands it, who doesn't get it, who doesn't have, you know. So many times I want to write back and say, do you ever write to somebody like your senator, somebody that could make a difference in your life? You know, do you just waste your time writing to cartoonists?
Cartoonists have all the power.
Yeah.
That said, we do have to wrap up here, unfortunately, but we'll be looking forward to your show tonight at the Wonder Ballroom.
Hey, can I mention really quick, I would love for people to go to my blog on MySpace. It's myspace.com/bizarroshow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, go look at my blog. I've been filling in stuff as I go along the road and talking about my travels and travails. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO with
myself, Bill Dodge, and SW Concer. Our guest this morning has been Dan Peraro, creator of the newspaper cartoon Bizarro. And if our listeners would like to show up at the Wonder Ballroom tonight to see the Bizarro show,
they can get tickets at www.bizarro.com. Look for Bizarro Comedy Tour. Dan Peraro, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. This was great.
And thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more of the Radio Zine on KBOO.
It's a minute after 10 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. At 10:17-ish, Dan Denver of the Portland Central American Solidarity Committee talks about NAFTA-style free trade and immigrant rights. At 10:30, on stage and studio, members of Artist Repertory Theater discuss Assassins by Steve Sondheim. And now, Terry Wiley of Oregon Tradeswomen discusses how that organization helps promote success for women in the trades.